Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Andy Linnas from Takeoff. This week, we're discussing design thinking. So, Andy, what is design thinking?
Hi, Monique. Thanks for having me, first of all. Just wanted to make sure that I'm not like a super expert of design thinking, but I'm definitely following. I have done courses myself and I'm facilitating some of the courses.
Okay.
So, and I was thinking how to break it down to a really simple level, because it's almost like asking what is creativity? Mm. I mean, as complex as that. So, I would say it's like set of mindsets, attitudes and processes that help you to solve any type of problem or challenge.
Business related, I'm hoping.
Not only.
Okay.
So it's like thinking, but it has these design principles to this.
Okay.
That helps you to redefine what are we solving at all. So what are the basics of this problem and can we use the tools of this mindset to come up with completely innovative solution.
Okay, so the benefit is that you would come up with a solution to any problem.
Yes, yes. So examples here. So it probably started more of product design, but then with time, people started thinking of how should we solve problems more human centered. How can we actually create something useful with the knowledge that we use for product design? And now they're actually solving things like how can we, reduce hunger in the world, or how can we, make our school children eat better at schools, and all these types of things can be applied with design thinking.
So you can literally use it in any scenario.
Exactly.
So how are you using it in terms of startups and entrepreneurs? How are you fitting it into that world? Is it again back to product and business design?
So I find design thinking the most useful at very early concept stage when you still are in discovery mode. Mm-hmm. So it helps you to actually define what are we solving at all and how can we solve it with least amount of money put into this, but also fitting the problem as much to the human-centered, basically. So defining what is the best value that we can create.
Okay. So this process, mm-hmm. what does it entail? What constitutes design thinking itself? What is the process? Where do you start?
All right. So there are different design thinking schools as such. So there probably are different processes, but to break them down, they would be quite logical thinking processes. So first defining a problem mm-hmm. and getting understanding it. So what are the main drivers of this challenge? Usually you will set up a question that you want to solve. So how can we make our students at the university more entrepreneurial, for instance?
Mm-hmm. And who do you ask these questions to?
You ask yourself.
Right.
So basically, okay. This is your starting point. Then you go into this observation mode, mm-hmm. which is a learning curve for yourself. So in this case, I would go out and interview some students who are perceived as more entrepreneurial and the ones who are completely far, far away from entrepreneurship to get the key insights. So what are the patterns? How can I see certain behaviors that I would need to, for instance, enforce? Mm-hmm. Right. Then you go into visualization mode, where you basically ideate on a lot of different ideas, but then also build a prototype. And prototype doesn't have to be a product. A prototype is a test, basically. So we can create what would be the event that could enhance the entrepreneurial mindset of students, or it could be a website, or it could. So this is outcome of our ideation mm-hmm. things. And then we would take this prototype for learning purpose again and go out and get the feedback from the actual students who would be using that in the future, mm-hmm. to see, does it actually move the needle in the right direction? Do right. we get the right type of attitude, for instance? Mm-hmm. And with this feedback, I'm going into evaluation step, basically trying to refine this process or this product or this service. And then once I have this iterated solution, I can implement it. So these are the main basic steps: define the challenge, observe, visualize, evaluate, iterate, and then implement.
And so does this process also encapsulate pricing and things like that when you're talking to the people? Would you be working out how much somebody would be willing to pay for something, how they would be willing to receive the mm-hmm. the item, how they would be willing to purchase it? That's all part of this, or this is literally for your product or service design?
That's why I'm saying it's very useful in early concept okay. stage, because you are coming up with at least one concept that is useful. Okay. So if we think about design thinking, there are like these three overlapping circles, mm-hmm. Which are desirability, feasibility, and viability. So desirable is basically, with this exercise that I just explained, basically is something that we understand what makes this new product or service that we're thinking about, what makes it desirable for these students, for mm-hmm. instance, right?
Okay.
But then we start thinking about also about feasible, what is technically possible with our budget, for instance, and viable, what is sustainable to do as well. So this will start changing and morphing our idea into a certain okay. direction.
Okay. So it starts out with an individual, but can groups use the same process as well if you're a small group of...
Yes, yes. Both. So it's a thinking method, basically. You can use it for yourself, or you can use it with a group. Similarly enough, here I would obviously engage a lot of students in the iteration, in the ideation phases, where it's actually, if it's built for them, then we need to get their ideas and their attitudes.
Is there a danger that you can ask the questions in such a way that you get the answers you want?
Uh-huh.
Or should you create the questions in such a way that you get the answers you want?
So I think the mindset of designer now, why design thinking, is he tries to understand how the subject or the object is behaving. So the thinking model is rather discovery and learning, back to be a student yourself, basically.
Okay.
And trying to even maybe push some of the boundaries of what you think has been done always this way, so past dependency, mm-hmm. and rather to see, can you completely change something that hasn't been thought of before? So this design thinking hat is rather different from the entrepreneur hat, who wants to make believe his point of view and usually might jeopardize with a question, for instance.
So it's actually you need to be transparent and honest with yourself and with the answers
sometimes,
ensure success.
Sometimes it's very counterintuitive, but you have to go with this flow, with the right mindset.
And so does the process guarantee success? Or is it showing you, proving yourself right or wrong along the way, and therefore you will have the right product at the end of it?
Well, that's a tough one to answer. Obviously, it will depend on the team who is implementing this or using this design thinking tool, how open they are and how experienced they are and things like this. It's very easy to get lost in this process because it's so fluid. It's very normal to feel fuzzy and lost in the early stage, because even when you're defining the challenge, you might define in a wrong way. So you might get lost already from the next steps there.
Okay.
But then if you're open enough and you're reflective every now and then, that's why these phases are always getting feedback in a small amount of steps.
And you could just go back and back and back until...
You reiterate so many times until you feel like now we're solving the big problem enough with the right tools we have.
So this is a sort of low cost exercise because it's time based rather than financially based.
Exactly, and that's why it's loved by so many agencies and so many entrepreneurs who implement this.
Does it have a sort of timeline? How long does a typical process take, or is that one of those depending on the product and the service type question?
Definitely depends, but if you get stuck in one problem for too long, then probably you're doing something wrong as well. So it has to have certain time limits. So I believe that as any consultancy projects would take probably 1 to 3 months where you can actually come up with very strong insights and learning points. And then implementation can take up to probably longer time when you're actually solving bigger problems there.
So by the time you've gotten to the end where you've got your evaluation, is that where you then start your business plan?
It depends on how you're implementing it, right? So, for instance, if we're solving a problem that we were talking about, how to make students more entrepreneurial, for instance, it doesn't have to be a business as such. It can be, NGO. Mm-hmm. But then if you want to build a product of this, then probably at a certain point, you would want to start thinking of how to, in the implementation phase, how to get it out to as many people as possible, how to make it affordable, and how to, you know, get the payments in and all these things.
Okay, so it's sort of almost in parallel with.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And not really more useful to any type of business or another, because you said before it can be used in any scenario. So
exactly,
whether you're an NGO,
exactly,
a service or a product.
So as an example here, so one of the most known agencies in the world is called IDEO. IDEO.
Okay.
And they're based in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco,
of
Bay
course.
Area. they have been one of the main propagators of this design thinking. They started off with maybe designing some of the products first, but then now they're solving even problems like I was explaining. So how can they help a certain county in US to make their school and eating habits
for the students more healthier.
So, for instance, problem there they defined was that, you know, schools weren't efficient enough in the half an hour wasn't enough time to do these pauses. So they created these movable carts where the packages were pre-packaged and you could get already payment was there. You could many of these and teachers could interact with students at the same time. So they managed to do it with community-built solution, for instance.
So they're not just changing the offering, they're actually changing the way the offering is delivered.
Exactly, the whole system.
Okay. So we've spoken to Dr. Leone Baldacchino from the Dr. De Bono Institute.
Yep.
And she was talking about the methodologies there. Does this line up or is it completely in the face of any of those methodologies?
I'm not like expert of De Bono methodologies as such, but I know, you know, ideation and lateral thinking and thinking hats. Mm-hmm. I would say they are integral part of design thinking. It's almost like tools that you would use in this process
as part of,
because you have to change perspective when you're designing something for the human. So design thinking names them as emotional parts of that. So you empathy.
Empathy. Yes, I've seen this.
So
yes.
You need to change your points of view and become this user, for instance, and understand his behavior.
So it's switching persona. So putting yourself in the shoes of your customer rather than behaving like your normal self.
Yes, yes, exactly like this.
Okay, so if you've just joined us, you're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Andy Linus from Takeoff, and we're discussing designed thinking. So what kinds of companies that we might have heard of would use this process?
Well, I haven't worked with any of these companies myself, but just looking at how they do their business, I would say, for instance, Apple would be a big design thinking enthusiast. For instance, if we take example as iPhone itself, which redefined the whole smartphone market, where the guiding principles of Steve Jobs were, you know, why would you use one stylus if we have five, meaning fingers? Mm-hmm. And already this is very human-centered approach, because how we interact with our phones and how we use that made him actually disregard the keyboard on the phone and innovate on the screen technologies to make them precise enough so that we can click and pinch and do that.
Yes.
So that was all probably the outcome of design thinking approach.
And also, they create goods that you desire that you don't need, for sure. So we've had a discussion earlier about iPhone 5 going up to iPhone 6.
Uh-huh.
Professor Russell Smith, his son was begging him for an iPhone 6 when the iPhone 5 works perfectly well. So again, you were talking about the circles of creating desire, and yeah, Apple does that. So
yes.
And any others that we might have heard of?
There's certainly many out there. I mean, Microsoft definitely uses that. I'm pretty sure Facebook uses it. For instance, how do we interact with other people and social networks and things like this? So,
and that's when they're constantly changing the user interface, because they're watching patterns of behavior.
Yes, yes.
I see, okay. So it's quite responsive,
yes.
Changing with the customers. This is another thing. Have people's behaviors changed? Because now we have technology in our hands. Now we have, you know, Generation X.
Yes, people's behavior change and our possibilities change, because we can, for instance, we could completely redesign how government is being run, how democracy works, how, you know, how we vote and things like this.
Please tell us how we can do that.
But I don't want to go into this today.
Program's too short. So, okay, I might take on that challenge. So how would you guide me through that process? How can I actually come along and learn more about design thinking, and what pitfalls would I need to avoid? So should we split that into two? What pitfalls are there first of design thinking?
All right. I think the guiding principle should be that we have right attitude or mindset to do this. We have to have enough of time. We do have to, you know, be comfortable with uncertainty, because sometimes you will have to do these things without even knowing will you come up with the right solution.
Mm.
And then if you have the right mindset and you follow this principle, probably by engaging right people, you'll get to the very good solution.
And the right answer, hopefully, and a saleable product or a new government.
Yes.
And any other pitfalls that we need to be aware of? So it's open-mindedness, you need to be honest with your questions, and time is not something to be rushed.
Yes, it takes time, because it is a learning curve. You have to observe. So maybe I can take you through some of the steps,
yes,
and then
please.
We can see what could be the pitfalls in each of these. So say somebody comes to take off with their concept idea. So the first thing I'll try to understand is, have they defined their challenge? Do they understand it in the first place? And this means that they would be able to actually tell how their target users behave, basically. And if they haven't done this, then that would be the first step. Basically, getting curious about your users and understanding, getting in their shoes, as we already mentioned. And here, the first pitfall would be being biased,
mm-hmm.
thinking that I know because, you know, I'm using myself these tools or these services, or because I'm building it for myself, then probably somebody would also find it useful.
Right.
These are the usual pitfalls here. And the tools, thinking model tools here in the learning is basically getting curious. You know, we have forgotten how to be curious.
Because everything's at our fingertips, so we ask the question to Google and he tells us.
Yes, yes.
But this is being really nosy, going out there, really asking questions.
Yes, but also even observing, silent observing may give you so many more answers than just questioning things.
Okay.
Because usually even our target audience doesn't know what they don't know.
And they might not like to admit to their behavior
exactly.
as well.
Yes. So they use a lot of tools of asking them to think aloud when they're doing something, just observing and questioning why are they doing this, going deeper and deeper. Sometimes you would shadow somebody just for days to uncover things that they might even maybe not notice that they do, but could be very crucial for your solution.
Okay.
Going into extremes is one of the thinking models. For instance, who would be the youngest and oldest or most experienced versus complete...
novice user or whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
So you could learn so much from the behaviors of these different groups of people. Then immersion is another thing. Can you create... a test or experience for yourself so that you go through some kind of feeling process yourself. So say you want to build a new Google and how you search things, you know, but then, so even trying to test yourself how you find and observe things would help you, for instance.
And if you get annoyed and you scream at the screen because the thing is always in the wrong side of the box,
yes.
It's always on the right and you're expecting it to be on the left or whatever. So that kind of observation you need to vocalize and take notes of.
Yes, yes. Okay. So outcome from these exercises are usually key insights. So you would have many different findings, but you have to converge them into guiding principle or like for Apple was this... stylus, for instance,
yes.
was guiding principle, which defined a lot of it, the product design later on. And this helps you to move into next step, basically. Now, next step is ideating, basically. And here you can do also very big mistakes when you're not open, when you're trying to rush to solutions. So with ideation, you have to diverge first. You have to go as broad and as crazy as possible.
Okay.
And not keep yourself, you know,
hemmed in or
brought down by logic or things like this. And then once you have explored huge amount of ideas, then you converge into, again, something more tangible that makes sense.
So the pitfall is that you can stay too narrow and...
Exactly, too narrow, or even if your team is not open enough, if you're doing in a group, for instance, you're rushing and already discussing ideas when you should just multiply the ideas, not discuss them. And even brainstorming, for instance, we feel usually that discussion is already brainstorming. It's not always true. You have different methodologies, and here the methods of the Bono Institute would come into handy, like changing your thinking hats or mashing ideas, basically. For instance, if you would want to innovate the hospital and the service at hospital, you could match the hotel industry and the hospital and see what ideas would crisscross and create completely new things. Or other people's shoe storm, basically, is one of the things that you can try, or e-storm. Nowadays we have so many online tools that you could just post a question and get, you know, hundreds of thousands of answers back and see what are the patterns that I could take from there and utilize in my product development.
Mm-hmm. So this is a bit like crowdsourcing ideas, essentially. So
a bit, yes. Yeah. The next phase is, what would be my first prototype? And then here, the pitfall is that you would want to already make an ideal or close to ideal thing or service. And this is not the point. You're building something completely useless almost, from the sense of it can be out of paper, out of something, but just that imitates and lets you immerse in this exercise, and through this building you learn again.
Because you're not trying to build the finished product.
Exactly.
Because you're hoping that through time, you'll go through various iterations to get to your final product. This is literally your first prototype.
Yes.
Okay.
So let me give you a very concrete example. So IDEO was building defibrillator. Mm-hmm. So they were interviewing some of the medical people and then people who wouldn't know about medics anything. And they wanted to build this first prototype with that would work autonomously, so you don't have to push it on. Mm-hmm. And when they tested this, pizza boxes were the first prototype. And when they tested, then people were starting searching for the start button, so they had to actually reiterate and put the start button even without any function because people got stuck.
So there's that observance of your customer again.
Yes.
Any other steps that are in the process?
Then basically it becomes very iterative. So you do your first prototype, you go and out and test, gather feedback, change something. You do many multiple loops until you're very clear what is your product you want to or service you want to implement.
So if somebody wanted to learn a bit more about this process, take their idea through this process, they come to see you at Takeoff at the University of Malta?
I obviously can support, and there are many online courses that are for free and people can just take them.
So just Googling designed thinking.
Yes.
Or yourself. So that's been really, really interesting. It's given me some inspiration. So thank you very much to this week's guest, Andy Linus from Takeoff Business Incubator here at the University of Malta. Next week, I'll be talking to John DeGiorgio of Sherbin Software about internationalization of an idea. Thank you for listening. See you next week. You've been listening to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers. The programme is aired every Wednesday on Campus FM at 9:30 a.m. and repeated on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Join us again next week to hear more about your journey in starting up a new business or launching a new product.